I'm Allison Kaskowski, otherwise known as the Allison K. I'm a fitness innovator and entrepreneur turned business mentor and retreat master. A client experience is more than just making the sale or the transaction. A client experience is about how it's put together so that clients can receive amazing real transformation. Here you'll hear all about how the industry leaders are creating amazing experiences. I'm always going to give it to you straight because I know your time is valuable. Are you ready? Let's get into the show.
Hey, everybody. It's Allison Kaskowski. Thanks for joining us, or joining me rather, today for our business podcast, Creating the World's Best Client Experiences. This is what I like to call an offshoot of our flagship show, which comes out every Tuesday, The Ultimate Journey of Self-Care. And I sort of like to frame this show in the context of self-care for your business. And I always like to do that from two different perspectives. One is, how do we always massively enhance customer value? And number two, how do we always highlight the transformation or result that we can help our clients get? But in all of that, today we're going to take a little bit of a detour and we're going to go a little bit higher with more of a 50,000 square foot view around what it takes, not just to build a startup, but what actually is a startup. Today, I'm excited about my guest today. He's a real pioneer in this area. My guest today is Gregory Shepherd, who is a published author. He has just written a book called The Startup Life Cycle, which we're actually going to talk about. But he's also an extremely successful entrepreneur. He's, you know, built and sold numerous companies. So I think there's just going to be lots and lots of gold here, regardless of where you are in your business journey. Thanks so much for joining me today.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Of course. So you and I were chatting a little bit a few minutes ago about your story. You've obviously accomplished a lot of things, and I'm not going to ask you to list all those things, but please just tell my audience a little bit about you.
Sure. I am a serial entrepreneur, so I've done 12 startups and 12 exits, 4 private equity awards for transactions between 250 million and a billion. Sold a couple companies to eBay Enterprise Marketing Solutions. Was in the C-suite as a strategy officer and the CTO following that. I have done a lot of investing also on the investor side, and I did a huge research project on founder success and failure, which was the basis of the book.
That sounds great. I mean, you obviously have done a lot of pretty amazing things, but one of the common threads that I'm hearing, and I know we were talking about this a few minutes ago, is the whole basis of a startup. Like, how do you even go about doing that? And I feel like in today's world, this seems to be a subject that's at least coming up a lot in some of my circles. And I know that you've just written a book. So let's start there. Tell us a little bit about what is a startup.
So there's different types of startups to begin with. There's two types. There is a growth startup, which is where you're raising capital and you're going to build it and sell it and then pay back the investors. And then there's a lifestyle startup, which is something that you're starting for yourself for your lifestyle, right? So that's like a restaurant, a salon, something along those lines. And yeah. So there are two different types of startups.
Yeah. So do you think one of those is more popular now than the other? Or I guess it really probably depends, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think that there's probably more people doing lifestyle startups, but there's a new growth startup every 10 seconds. So there's a lot of those too. I'm not sure which one is more popular, but I can tell you that in my world, doing growth startups is the most popular thing because, you know, you raise money for it, right? So if you do it that way, you don't have debt, you don't have to pay back the money if it doesn't work, et cetera, versus in a growth startup, you've got everything riding on it, right? Usually people have financed their own credit cards, et cetera, to get it off the ground. And you don't have any investor support, right? So when you need money, what are you going to do? Well, with a growth startup, you can go get money from investors.
Yeah. Well, I can see where that would be an attractive option, depending on, you know, what your model is. But I know this is a subject that's very near and dear to your heart. So why don't you tell us a little bit about your story?
Yeah. I mean, I started out with nothing. You know, I was raised actually homesteading on land. And then I started actually by selling rattlesnakes, believe it or not. I would catch them and sell them as, yeah. I would catch them and sell them as exotic pets. So I was a little entrepreneur from a young age. Fast forward, I've built companies in biotechnology, banking, transit technology, ad technology. I've invested in companies across the realm. So most of the stuff was in technology. Before the internet came out, it was like banking and biotechnology and things along those lines. And then after the internet came out, I moved everything to technology because I was like, how amazing is it that you can think of something in your mind and then just build it on a screen? It's amazing. Imagine if you could build a restaurant or something like that, that way, where you just...
Absolutely.
You know, it's amazing.
The virtual world has just done... I mean, it's really mind-boggling if you think today what we can actually build, not just with the virtual space, but to your point, by just conceptualizing an idea and literally laying it out online. I mean, who would have thought this is where we'd be?
Yeah, it's absolutely amazing. And depending on the kind of founder you are, there's different kinds of people that start companies, right? There's what's called a visionary, which is somebody who sees the world and the business opportunity from the outside in. And then there's what's called a subject matter expert who sees the world and the business from the inside out, right? And so if you're a subject matter expert, maybe you're somebody that works inside of an industry and you see a problem and you're like, I have a solution to this problem. And then you go out and build a business versus somebody on the outside may say, I see a whole industry that right. needs to be worked on.
Right. Yeah. And I do think that in today's world, I think there's, you know, quite a few in both of those categories as far as, you know, natural born entrepreneurs, if there is such a thing.
100%. But ultimately, everybody is trying to find, I mean, you know, when you think about businesses, there are businesses that take advantage of an opportunity and there are businesses that solve a problem. And they're different, right? Like Facebook was taking advantage of an opportunity. They weren't necessarily solving a problem. Right. Apple, on the other hand, solved a problem and then took advantage of the opportunity on the heels of solving the problem.
Yeah. And I also think, too, that it really takes, and some people, I think, just have a natural ability to do this. And other people, I think, really hone it over time. And that is sort of looking around and being aware of what buyer behavior is telling you, you know, like what people are talking about, what people are saying they really want. And I think a lot of very successful people that I know in the business space have really been able to take advantage of that.
Yeah, I mean, finding problems is relatively easy. The thing that makes entrepreneurs unique is not finding the problems. And people always talk about there's a problem, somebody should create right. a business for, you know, it what makes them unique is seeing the problem as an opportunity. And then actually executing on that, right? Taking advantage of that as an opportunity.
Yeah. And sometimes it's about the right timing too. You know, it's about having something that people want, you know, at the right time. Like I'll give you an example is, you know, right now we do a lot of retreats and events. And, you know, right now, this is what a subject that I call people are very solution aware of what that is because travel is at an all-time high right now. So the learning curve, you know, necessarily can be a little bit shorter with people in terms of explaining the benefit of it. Whereas sometimes when the timing element really isn't as clear, it's a little bit more of a heavy lift, you know, to educate your audience in addition to explaining the problem that you're solving.
Yeah, we call those headwinds and tailwinds. So yep. if you have a tailwind, it means that the energy, like you said, travel is at an all-time high. So right now, that's a tailwind, right? So you see something that's going your direction versus yeah. a headwind, which is something that's not going your direction. And these things usually are balanced out based on market conditions. Mm-hmm. So if you're in a bull market, people are looking to make money. And if you're in a bear market, people are looking to save money. So those are two types of businesses, right? Businesses that right. make money, businesses totally. That save money. For people or other businesses.
Yeah, absolutely. So tell us a little bit about your book. I know I'm really curious and I would love for you to be able to explain. I know it's taken you a long time to put it together and I know it's probably been a labor of love, but at the same time, you know, we want to make sure that we get it out there too.
Yeah. So the Startup Lifecycle was based off of a 5-year research project I did trying to convince the government to move money down to startups and show why founders were succeeding and why they were failing so that we could prove that we could do something about it. My goal was to try to drop the failure rate by 20% by doing so, evolve our world, right? I mean, if you look at the world, startups are the things that change everything. It's not big companies. They buy the startups, but they're not the ones that actually change things. And in the process, it also helps out with environmental impact and social impact. So you can help people that are marginalized, people that are ignored, stepped on, stepped over, or unappreciated. So that was the basis of the book. And all the research that went into it, when I was done with it, I was like sitting here going, I have to get this out. And so that's when I started the book. And it took me years to finish the book because of the parsing of all of the data, grabbing sentiment, and, you know, trying to make sure I understood and documented correctly the information I got during the research. So it covers the startup life cycle, meaning what are the steps that you go through when you're building a business? And this applies to both a lifestyle startup and a growth startup. Like, you still have steps that you go through in order to build a business. So that was the basis of the book.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. So can you give us a sneak peek? Can you like walk us through what's in it?
Yeah. So it starts with some basic information that kind of covers how the market works. And then it goes through the seven stages of a life cycle. The first one is vision. So vision is where you ideate your idea. This is where you say, okay, I have this idea, and you refine and hone the idea. And you do that through a series of steps, which starts with what? What is your business idea? What is your product? Second is who? Who should your business, who should be buying your business? Who should be buying your product? And then it goes through when. So when are you going to have this thing available? And then you have how. So how are you going to go about this? And that collection of things I call the North Star, which is, you know, your guiding light, right? Then you move from there into product. And this is where you take whatever it is that you're going to develop and you start building a product. So if it's a restaurant, it's starting to build out the food you're going to make. If it's a growth startup, let's say in technology, this is where you go through a process of first you have your prototype, which is just a simple, it could be clay, it could be, you know, you're cooking in your kitchen, whatever it is, you have your prototype. You go from your prototype to your pilot. And your pilot is a functioning, working product or something that's ready for consumption. And then you go to your minimal viable product, your MVP. And your minimal viable product now is something that you're actually going to start selling. During this process, and I know that you talk about customers a lot, during this process, you need to build advisory boards. So advisory boards are somebody in industry, so somebody that's in the industry and understands it. A customer, so somebody that will eventually become a customer, an acquirer, if you're going to sell your business, you need to have an acquirer on there, and an investor, somebody who's going to tell you what they actually think about your product.
Yeah.
Now, you get that to that point of product. After that, you go into your go-to-market. And your go-to-market is a process of going through and making sure that you're testing out all of the different approaches you have to acquire customers. And then, and this is a long process of testing and trying things and looking at the cost versus the reward, how much you would invest, what the cycle times are, how long it'll take to get a customer, your customer acquisition cost to your lifetime value ratio, which is just lifetime value being how much is your customer worth. And then your CAC is, you know, customer acquisition, how much cost you get it. So this is a ratio. So it's like, if I invest a dollar, I make three. If I invest a dollar, I make five, that sort of thing.
Right, right.
When you're done with that, you move into standardization.
So I'm thrilled to announce that I'm partnering with a brand new product, and it's called Cellevate. This is an amazing, tasty, gummy supplement, and it comes in two varieties. One designed to help you with inflammation and recovery, perfect for after a workout, or if you've had like several days in a row where you've really pushed it and you're really starting to feel it in your body, this is the perfect addition to a regular routine. The other formula helps address focus and memory, which, let's be honest, I think we can all use a little help there, right? What's different about Cellevate is that not only does it taste great, but it has amazing antioxidant power. So many vitamins and supplements on the market today, you either have to take several in a single day to even see any kind of tangible result, or most of the time, a lot of them don't even give you the result that they promise. And Cellevate checks both boxes. I take one of each formula every day, and what's more is that they pack and travel really well. So you can take some and put them in a Ziploc bag and throw it in your bag when you're going out of town, and they won't melt. And it just is the perfect addition to whatever it is that you're doing every day in the way of vitamins and supplements and whatever else works for you. So I knew that I had to get in here and at least tell you about it. I would love it if you would head over to their site and give it a try. I'm actually going to offer you a really special deal. You can find this amazing product at their website, and that's spelled Cellevate.com, which is Cellevate.com. And use my special promo code, the Allison K 2024, and you can save 15% off. I would love to know what you think once you have a chance to try this.
This is something that I get into a lot of arguments. People are like, you know, oh, you go into growth. Now you just lay down the accelerator and you go into growth. But what people don't understand is that standardization prevents you from having the problems that you don't know you have and those that you do have from growing. Those problems will grow with you. So when you look at companies that fail, 47.1% fail in the first 18 months. And my research was 5 years. So over the following 5 years, that's when the rest going up to 90% failed. So They failed in the following 5 years for things they did in the first 18 months or didn't do. So that includes the standardization process, which is just simply documenting what happens in your business, who does those things, and how those things are actually done, right? That's what it is. Just a simple process that explains those things. Then you go into optimization. And optimization is where you try to look at those things and figure out how to make them smoother, faster, and more efficient. That's a margin exercise. When you think about businesses, there's three things that create value for the business: growth, margin, and retention. And so standardization and optimization affects all three of them because all three of them are operational exercises.
Yeah, that makes sense. So, I mean, it obviously is something that you know really, really well. And to anyone listening, they're probably thinking, wow, that's a lot. I really haven't thought about it like that. So I'm just wondering, like, for people out there thinking, maybe people who are wondering where the best opportunity is for that. I mean, I guess my question is, what are some easy places that you, other than getting your book, that you could recommend that people start if they want to look into this process for themselves?
Well, in the book, there are QR codes. And if you scan those QR codes, you'll be sent to a platform. I built a platform that has 200,000 investors. It's got grants in there. It's got all these courses that you can take that sort of expand on what you learned in the book. There's things in there like all the communities that you could go to, podcasts, YouTube shows, fabulous. Everything in the startup ecosystem. And it's free. So you can go to my website, gregoryshepherd.com, click on founders, and you can just log in. And that's what I tried to do because, you know, you write a book, first of all, it's dated, from the point that you finish the manuscript, it's a year before it hits shelves. Right. So it's already old, right?
Right.
So I was like, I need...
We're in the information age today. So it's like, unless you're publishing something, you know, all the time, it's just, to your point, it's like, that's the reality.
Right, exactly. So what I did is I put together the platform so that people could log in and they could get the latest, greatest. And you only have 250 pages in a book, right? I mean, I wrote like 5,800 pages. So, you know, there's a lot more to know than what you can put into a book. And it's not dynamic. It's, you know, there's nothing to execute. That's why I put together the platform. So I would say, read the book, go to the platform. you know, and you'll get a lot more information on it.
Yeah. So you could get the book on your website. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. You could get the book on the website or Amazon. It's in Audible and in bookstores. You know, you can order it anywhere.
Awesome.
Yeah. And so after you do this standardization and optimization phase, then you go into growth. And now you're safe to go into growth. Most businesses that fail in the growth stage fail because they put themselves out of business.
Yeah.
Right? They don't understand the cost of growth, which is something a lot of people just don't even think about. They right. go in and they're like, I'm making all these sales, but you don't know the costs associated with it.
Totally. 100% agree.
Yeah.
And it's also, I think, a matter of having a plan to manage that, to your point. You know, it's thinking about, you know, what comes next and how can I best like position this so that it doesn't completely drown me, which, you know, a lot of business owners, I think they get to a point and they start making sales and they think that's the end of the road. It's really not.
No, it's the beginning, actually.
Totally. Yeah.
I mean, yeah. You have to service them. You have to, now you have to deal with all of the money that moves around and expenses and functional areas, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah.
And that's really where I think thinking about like, you know, team and people that can support you and really, you know, I really think this is something front of mind for a lot of business owners today is, you know, what's my plan for the next 5 years or 10 years even? And so many business owners aren't even thinking that way, which just blows my mind the more people I talk to.
Yeah. I mean, speaking of the cost of growth, you know, the data says that when you hire somebody new, 33% of their first year's wages is burned up just getting them to 75% productivity.
Yeah.
So if you're hiring somebody for $100,000, that's $33,000. So if you're hiring five people at a time, and you're in a growth, you could see how you could put yourself out of business real quickly.
Totally. Yeah. And it's just, I think it's just understanding that you literally, it's not like you don't want to be paying attention to what's happening today, but you really want to be looking more ahead, you know, down the road.
Yeah. It's a matter of like paying attention to, you know, when you start a business, you have to know where you are and where you're going, right? Like a GPS.
Yeah.
And if you don't understand those two markers, then you end up meandering all over the place.
Yeah.
So, you know, I always tell people, I'm like, you need to understand where you are and where you're going. What does success look like to you?
Yeah.
And then you need to stay on a straight and narrow path to achieve that. So the North Star helps out with that. Just a quick note on hiring people and that cost of hiring people. Previously, we talked about standardization. Well, standardization and optimization can reduce that cost from 33%. And I've tried it and I've got it down to 10%.
Wow.
So if you document, because think about you're starting a company, a business of any sort, and you hire a new person, they have to learn how to do their job. So they're either going to distract.
Yeah.
Well, there's that learning curve. They're going to distract the people. It's not just them that is inefficient. But they're also distracting the people that know how to do the job from doing the job because that's their training. When you do standardization, now the training is it's in documents. So they can read it and understand it. I go into that a lot in the book.
Yeah. Oh, wow. That's just really interesting. I know I'm going to have to get a copy because I'm fascinated by all the nuts and bolts and how all this works. I think I've been like this since I was a kid. So I totally get that. So any parting words or any parting thoughts or anything you want to leave people with before we wrap?
I think that, yeah, there's two things I want to go over. One is what I call, is what I think of as being, there's a handful of things that founders and people that are starting companies need to have. And there's five fingers in your hand, so I call it a handful. It's
Love
focus,
it.
Drive, enthusiasm, discipline, and optimism. Those are the things you need. If you have those things, most of the time you can overcome the challenges you have and you can move forward.
I like how simple you keep that. You know, I talk to a lot of people and they offer like tips and things to do and all that, but that's extremely simple. And when people think about a hand, it's like they would think about five things.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah. So can you just repeat those five things one more time for people listening?
Yeah, sure. Focus. If you can't focus, you're not going to succeed. That's the first one.
Absolutely.
Drive is driving towards something that's intrinsic. There's two types of motivation. Intrinsic is internal, and yeah. extrinsic, which is money, right?
Wars.
Exactly. Yeah. So you have to be intrinsically motivated, and that's drive, right? Driving to something that you want to achieve. So that's focus and drive. You have enthusiasm. Enthusiasm is contagious. And if you're not enthusiastic, you're going to have a really hard time getting your team members to have drive in the first place because yeah. you're not enthusiastic yourself about it. Yeah, optimism. Yeah. And optimism is the biology of hope, right? I mean, how are you going to achieve anything and get past all the obstacles if you don't actually believe it's going to happen in the first yeah. place? So you yeah. have to be optimistic about that outcome.
Yeah. And I think you have to be able to see it before it's actually completed, and which requires obviously not just optimism, but a hell of a lot of belief in what you're doing too, because that's ultimately what people are interested in.
Right. If you don't believe it, you're not going to be optimistic. If you're not optimistic, you're not going to achieve it.
Totally. 100%.
So that's focus, drive, optimism. And the last one I think is probably the most important one is discipline.
Yep.
So having the discipline to do the things you don't want to do. When you don't want to do something, usually that's the first thing you should do.
Yep. Yeah. You know? 100%. Yeah. Well, I just think, you know, my background has been in health and fitness, and I've spent a lot of years in the fitness industry, and I've watched a lot of things kind of come and go. But the discipline principle is like never, never, ever goes out of style. It's like, you know, that you've adopted what I used to always tell my clients when I was working in fitness full time is, you know, you've adopted the habit when you can go and do your workout on a day when you really don't want to, or when the weather sucks or you don't feel like it, or it's the last thing on your mind. The idea is to get it to where it's part of who you are.
And that's so when it counts the most, right?
Absolutely. 100%. And that's what I was thinking of as you were talking about what discipline means. It's like, there are plenty of days as an entrepreneur when I'm like, you know what? I'm just not feeling it. I don't want to work today. But you know what? If I really did that some days, it's like, I wouldn't be anywhere near where I am. So it just becomes part of who you are.
Yeah. I mean, overcoming the obstacles with discipline is empowering as heck.
It's a superpower when you learn how to really, like, make it work for you.
Yeah. Harnessing your own mind.
Yeah.
Changing it is massively powerful.
Absolutely. I think it's your best offensive weapon out there.
100%. I agree with you more than anything. I used to be, when I was younger, I was a bodybuilder.
Yeah.
And I got third in the nationals. I was giant. And
yeah.
I remember so many times where I would get myself all the way to the front door of the gym and then be staring at the door going, oh God, I don't want to do, it's like leg day or something.
I know. Yeah. It's like, I really don't want to do my cardio today. I'm just going to rest, you know. And it's not like, it's not like you can't take a day off. But the problem with that, and where we really have to be onto ourselves, and this is very true for business too, is that sometimes that day off leads to another day off, and then it leads to another day off. And then before you know it, you're just in a bad cycle for yourself. So you really have to be onto yourself and really be able to coach yourself out of that.
Yeah. I mean, neuropathways, like, this is science, right? Your brain has these things called neuropathways, and they get wider the more you do the thing, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So it goes from a little road to a freeway or a highway if you're doing the thing over and over. Well, when you don't want to do something and you do it anyway, it actually strengthens the tunnel, that neuropathway.
Yep.
And one of the things I tell people, especially founders, as I say, imagine two tunnels, and they're both beautiful. And at the end of both tunnels is light. And one of the tunnels, the tunnel on the left, is your forecasted future. This is what's going to happen if you keep doing things the way you're doing it. On the other tunnel is your manifested future. This is what's going to happen if you change the way you're doing things. And then I ask them, at the end of those two tunnels, you need to see the way your life is going to be 6 months from now, a year from now, 5 years from now. And if you see the forecasted tunnel turns out to be something that you don't want, and the other tunnel is, then you need to change the habits that you have to create that future.
Yep, absolutely. And to your point, I know we've already said this, but I'll just say it again. It's also about being able to really see what you can't see. You know, it's like one of the things my coach and I talk about all the time is, you know, all of your power's in what you don't see. And when you finally get that and you make it work for you, then everything changes.
Yep. Very wise.
Love it. How can people connect with you? This is such a great chat. How can people reach out to you if they want to know more about you and what you do or any of that?
Yeah, I mean, my website is gregoryshepherd.com, and on there is all my LinkedIn and all that sort of stuff. There's all the whatever 100-something articles I've written and the podcasts I've been on, and everything is there. So they should have everything. There's also a brand new thing, which is an AI chat that I put in there where you can actually talk to me. It's got everything I've ever done in there. So you can actually have a conversation with it. It's pretty crazy and it's free.
Isn't AI just the wildest thing ever?
Oh, it's just absolutely nuts. Yeah. I mean, this thing blows my mind. I couldn't believe it.
Yeah, it's incredible. And I just think we're only scratching the surface of what we're actually looking at for the future. So that's what's pretty incredible to me. Thanks so much for taking time to talk with me today. I really appreciate you sharing your insights.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, of course. So folks out there listening, if you're a founder, if you're at a stage in your business where you're kind of considering what's next, or if you're just flat out intrigued by what we've talked about, I would really recommend that you go over to Gregory's website and get his book and take advantage of all the resources that he talked about that are there, the communities, the websites, the access to investors, all of that, if that's something that you're thinking about. If on that note, if what you heard today was really helpful for you or inspired you and you know somebody, please feel free to copy the link to this episode and share it with that person as a gift from me, or you can just write to me and we'll take care of it for you. You can reach out to me on my website, www.theallisonk.com, and just hit the connect button in the upper right-hand corner and just write to me and we will take care of it for you. This is why we have such an amazing worldwide audience. And this is why I'm always encouraging you that my DMs are always open, because I always love hearing from you. Thanks for all your support, for always listening and following, subscribing and downloading. This is why we've been so successful and why we've been on the air now almost 6 years, which is really hard for me to believe. But you guys are the reason why I show up every week. So this is Allison Katzkowski with Creating the World's Best Client Experiences. That's what I got for you this week on the podcast, folks. We'll see you next time. Bye.